Hello and welcome to the Raising Men Show, and I'm your host, Craig Carlisle. I'm excited today. Tuesdays are amazing days. I always call them Super Tuesdays. So those of you who are listening out there on WKBY 1080 AM out of Chatham, Virginia, you know that Tuesdays are special to me. And I have an extra special guest on the phone with me, Harry Bryant. I'm going to call him Dr. Harry Bryant because he's, you know, he's philosophically a doctor to me and my family. He's been a great blessing to us, and I met him a number of years ago when we were working together on a film project, Restored Me. As a matter of fact, you guys are, in fact, at Bible Way Church, you guys were great supporters of the film and still are supporting the film and our efforts, and he's supporting, great supporters of the Raising Men Show, and we were able to screen the film right there in Bible Way Church. With, it's just an awesome thing with, you know, just with the bishop and everyone else out there at Bible. We thank you for your continued support and just continuing love and prayers for the ministry and for our efforts here, especially right here on WKBY 1080 AM. Good morning, Dr. Bryant. How are you today?
Good morning. How are you today?
You know, I'm outstanding. You know, and you and I were talking off air before even, you know, getting on a call today and recording that, just about what God had been doing for us and with us and to us, and just kind of, that's almost like our ongoing conversation daily and whenever we speak. And I think it's pretty awesome, and that we just even have this opportunity. Because, you know, I've been talking about doing this for, I don't know, almost 2 years, right?
Seems that way, yeah. And I'm actually very grateful and very, very blessed and very honored to be able to be on air today. I'd like to say, as we've talked recently, God orders our steps, and today seems to be the day.
That's it.
So there's no reason to fight it. That happened to be you were spurred by the Holy Spirit to say, hey, do you have a little bit of time today? And I actually do.
Well, so the cool thing is when we talk on the phone, it's usually an hour anyway. so it made a lot of sense this morning. You said, well, you know, I want to just record that hour and we'll just go from there, you know?
That is true. Well, I should forewarn your listeners that be prepared to, you know, go down random rabbit holes, which is seems to be a trademark of the conversations. It's whatever God drops on my heart or into my spirit that day. And you sir, have made many a journey down the rabbit holes with me.
Oh yeah. My nickname should be Alice, right?
That one may stick. Be careful.
Well, in the sports field where you are, you know, most of the guys that you deal with and are seen, they have nicknames, right?
That is true.
I mean, Joe Namath, I'm sure, you know, Broadway Joe, and I'm sure Nolan Ryan's got a nickname that I personally do not know. I always knew him as
Nolan. Was known as the Ryan Express.
Oh, there
back,
you go.
Back early in his career, there was a movie called The Von Ryan Express that came out, so that probably predates almost all listeners, and even me a little bit, by about a year or two. But he was nicknamed the Ryan Express, and that one seemed to stick. So that's one of the more popular ones. So yes, there are quite a few monikers that get hung on athletes. Some of them they're probably pretty proud of, and some of them they're probably don't want to follow them around. So
you don't want them to stick like some other things, right?
Exactly.
Well, for those that are listening on WKBY 1080 AM or out there on the archives on theraisingmenshow.com, Harry Bryant is the, well, I'm not going to even be exaggerating when I say this, but he's an industry leader in the authentications business. And for those of you who are not quite sure what that means and what the application of that is practically, is that if any of you happen to, I'm sure I've seen an autograph done somewhere or having tried to ask an athlete or, you know, a television personality or something like that to sign this or sign that, sign my shirt, sign my face, sign my hand, sign my hat, ball, basket, whatever it is, this young man is the one that would be providing what's called a certificate of authenticity, meaning he's certified that signature that you have on whatever it is the true and actual signature by the person that you swear it is. Now, probably in so many instances, I couldn't read what that person's name really was because their penmanship is something that's along the lines of a medical professional, but whatever that is, whatever scribbles, whatever signature that's used, Harry knows that that is the signature for that athlete, for that personality, for that star. Now, Harry, let the listeners know, I mean, how do you get into that business? What does it do? I mean, I know you've met a lot of people. Who are your clients that are regulars? The names that you're going to mention are household names. So you may not know Harry Bryant, but the people that Harry Bryant knows and works and come to contact with that call him, or whose people call Harry to work with him to authenticate what they do, you'll know them immediately. Harry, share with us some of the names and what you do.
Well, I mean, it goes really way back to, I'm going to date myself here, but my senior year of high school, which was 1980. Yes, it was a long time ago. A friend of mine and I would go to the stadium, and we would just collect autographs. His grandfather was an associate scout for the Yankees, and so he had a season pass. And so my friend and I would go to the ball games using the season pass that his grandfather had, just to go to general admission and just get into the ball games. And we would get, you know, cards and baseballs if we happened to catch one during batting practice, signed after the, you know, after the games or before the games. And we didn't really have any, you know, gainful employment. We were, you know, cutting lawns and babysitting and working. I was working as a dishwasher, so we would spend that money to drive into Yankee Stadium to get autographs and to see players and to follow what I guess in our minds was a pretty good experience for the summer after you graduate from high school, and getting to watch free baseball at you know the house that Ruth built. So I was a Met fan, but I sucked it up and went to Yankee Stadium just because of the fact that we didn't have to pay to get in. So we started there, and then what it merged into that is that was in the infancy of the autograph, the baseball and sports memorabilia craze. It was in its infancy, and so players would do these different autograph shows, and they would charge, you know, $2 an autograph or $3 an autograph. And we thought, like, well, it's for what we spend in gas and time to go in and try to get something that we don't know we're going to get. We said it's actually worked out more convenient to spend $2 to get a guy to sign something than to chase him down for 3 days when they were in town and maybe not get him. So we started to recognize that there was, you know, a benefit to be doing this, and because it was in its infancy and because we were so passionate about it, you know, we started to gain more and more access, more and more credibility, and I it didn't take me long to realize that when these athletes were being paid by the hour at the time to sign stuff, I recognized the fact that the more autographs that the promoter got, the more beneficial it was. So I would start to be able to work with the athletes at the tables rather than be the customer on the other side of the table. I would work with an athlete. You know, they would pick somebody that they wanted me to work with and say, well, today you're going to work with Eric Davis or, you know, Mickey Mantle. Eric Davis, for those of you that are, you know, less than 40 years old, he was a rising superstar with the Cincinnati Reds at the time. At that time, I started to recognize that. And then there was a major show, a gathering of the 500 Home Run Club in Atlantic City back in 1989. 88, late 88, early 89, and I had the privilege of being tasked with working with Mickey Mantle that weekend.
Oh, that's amazing.
And so it sort of blossomed because I understood the business side of the whole appearance market, because when you're paying somebody by the hour, you don't want somebody sitting next to them that just wants to hear, you know, old stories while the player is not signing. So I recognize quickly if a player signed while you talked, you can go ahead and talk to them. If the player stopped and engaged you while you were talking to him, you waited till he was done signing, had done his commitment, and then you maybe you'd get to go to dinner with him, or maybe you'd ride in the car with him back to the airport. But, you know, you talked when the person was having the pen in his hand, you tried to make it as beneficial for the promoter as possible, and that was recognized early. And I got a chance to work with a promoter that was doing shows all over the country, and so he was out of California, but he had some of the key athletes at the time under autograph deals, under contracts. And so if he had Roger Clemens and, at the time, another name from the past, you know, Mike Greenwell, who was another rising star for the Boston Red Sox. If the Red Sox were in Cleveland for a weekend series, he would have Roger Clemens and Mike Greenwell and Wade Boggs appear on that Saturday because it was a night game. They would appear during the day, and then he would have a couple Hall of Famers appear on Sunday. So what would happen is Red Sox were in Cleveland for a weekend series. We were going to Cleveland. He worked with Mark McGwire and Jose Canseco of the Oakland A's. If the Oakland A's were in Boston one weekend for a weekend series, if he was able to find a hotel that he could run a show, we'd be going to Boston that weekend. So it was pretty crazy for, at the time, I was 24, 25 years old, to be working with the elite athletes at the time that were, playing on the professional level. So it was you go from, 1980, going to free baseball games and hoping to catch a foul ball to, working with Jose Canseco when he's in the middle of his 40-40 season, or working with Mark McGwire when he's breaking the rookie home run record, or, it just stuff that you would never have even imagined in your wildest dreams. Working with Darryl Strawberry and Dwight Gooden during their prime, and it just was one of those things where like I said, on the Sundays, the Hall of Famers would be there. So, Bob Feller, Bob Gibson, Sandy Koufax, it was one of those things it was kind of nirvana for a baseball fan.
It's pretty interesting too, when you mention the names, and I know those who are listening out there, some of them are going to recognize them and some are not. Some of our parents are going to recognize them because, we have some millennials out there that are following the show, which is pretty awesome. But for those that are in our age group that recognize the names, they're going, oh, wow. And when you think about being behind the scenes of a ballpark, Harry, that's got to be so awesome. I mean, did you find yourself being a fan and fanning then versus do you find yourself fanning less or the same now?
I think what happened is the reason why I think I've been blessed with success in this industry is that I've sort of never overstepped my bounds with them. With the players, I've recognized that, from a sports fan, I was walking on some hallowed ground, and I think you do get jaded. I'm not going to lie there, but you do get jaded sometimes because you can walk into a back room of a show and there could be, 30 Hall of Famers that are at various tables or doing work, and you walk in and say, you're cordial and say hello, and, you realize that as you're walking away, you're like, yeah, that was, that was Joe Montana. Yeah, that was Steve Carlton. That was, and it's hard to say because there are times when I think if I met Jordan, I'd probably be tongue-tied. Michael Jordan is kind of like the missing crown jewel in the crown. I've worked with Wayne Gretzky and Muhammad Ali and Joe DiMaggio when the company that I went on to work for, they had him under contract. I did over 30 signings with Joe DiMaggio. And when we were going to do our first signing from the company's perspective, my wife asked me why we were going to sign with Mr. Coffee. So that puts things in perspective every once in a while too. Because he was known for as the Mr. Coffee spokesperson. She didn't recognize that he'd played for the Yankees retired in 1951. So he retired before we were born. And so, she wouldn't have, she'd had no historical perspective, but clearly going to Yankee Stadium, during my misspent youth, after high school, Joe DiMaggio was a very large presence. You knew who DiMaggio and Mantle and Berra and Whitey Ford, and you even knew the players that most people wouldn't even recognize, but Bill Dickey, who was the catcher before Yogi Berra, also in the Hall of Fame, also wore number 8. So when the number 8 was retired by the Yankees, it's in honor of Bill Dickey and of Yogi Berra, not just Yogi Berra. So I think that somewhere along the line, I might try to answer the question. welcome to rabbit hole number 7 of the conversation, probably.
Yeah.
I've taken more time lately to really and truly enjoy and recognize the blessing that's been put before me. I realize that God equipped me for this role before I even knew it. And it's, you know, you look at one of our conversations, I like to reverse engineer how things happen. And I start to look at, you got to remember, I grew up in New York. I live in Texas now, but I grew up in New York. And as a 8-year-old, collecting baseball cards for the first time, 1970 Topps baseball cards had the world champion New York Mets as one of their cards. And the Jets had just won the Super Bowl recently, and the Knicks had won the NBA championship recently. The New York Rangers hadn't won since 1940, but that's beside the point. But as a kid, you know, you're collecting these cards, and these are your sports heroes. These guys have their pictures on baseball cards and football cards and basketball cards. And now I'm blessed to work with Joe Namath and Nolan Ryan. You know, you step back and you have to recognize, and the relationships are, I've worked with Nolan Ryan since 1989, the year he got his 5,000 strikeout. I met him that off season, through the whole connections that I was able to have. I was able to start to get field passes to shoot photos. And so you asked earlier, like when you walk on the field, you know, does that ever get jaded? It makes it hard to go to a game now when you've sat in the photo pit. It does make it kind of hard to go to a game and sit, you know, 30 rows back. And I know that sounds really arrogant, but there's nothing that can compare to being that close, because you're right next to the dugout. I've had players that would, you know, ask to look through my camera lens, you know, because it was the 400 millimeter lens that I used back in the late 80s, early 90s, was the longest lens that you would use at a sporting event, at a baseball game for the most part. And so, you know, it kind of makes it hard to have somebody sitting in front of you when you're used to literally having nothing but grass in front of you. So
yeah.
I still look back and recognize the fact that, again, it's just the opportunities that were laid before me. You could have given me, you could have given me 100,000 opportunities, guesses at what you would be doing to make a living, and I would never have landed on what I do.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
It's been an amazing journey.
Definitely has been. And when we come back from break, we're going to be able to speak more and hear more about Harry's, you know, his follows and his paths. And I'm sure we'll go down another rabbit hole or 12 in our time together. Again, you're listening to the Raising Men Show right here on WKBY 1080 AM out of Chatham, Virginia. You're also able to pick us up on our streams on iTunes and Spotify on theraisingmenshow.com. We'll be right back.
Hey everyone, my name is Eric Tomlinson with the Tomlinson Group at Rancon Real Estate, where we design the sale of your home around you. With our nationwide network of agents, you and your family are at the center of every decision, conversation, and step of the journey to your next home. From hello to congratulations, selling your home with the Tomlinson Group at Rancon Real Estate is designed to both learn and surpass your expectations. Call me today at 951-970-6727 so we at the Tomlinson Group can begin surpassing your expectations today. We want to work for you.
Does your business need to rank higher on the Google search engine? Do you want everything that your company touches to turn to gold? If you've answered yes to either of those questions, you need to contact Bright Media House. Generating relevant customer leads is critical to increasing sales and growing your business. By figuring out which online sales and social media marketing channel to use and how to use them can be overwhelming, especially when you have a business to run. Digital marketing is something every business owner and marketing manager needs as a part of their strategy. For more information,
go to www.brightmediahouse.com or email us at info@brightmediahouse.com.
All right, and we're back to the Raising Men Show. And again, I'm your host, Craig Carlisle, and you're listening to us, of course, on WKBY 1080 AM out of Chatham, Virginia, or you're probably listening to us also online, iTunes, Spotify, or any of the other networks out there on theraisingmenshow.com. That's RZNGMEN. That's, of course, theraisingmenshow.com. Harry, you know, you were mentioning, we were talking about Nolan Ryan at the close of the last segment, and that one of the questions I always have for you is, how in the world did you ever get started with working with Nolan? But even before I ask that question, you need to know that you blessed my family and myself specifically with a picture of Nolan Ryan. It was an autographed picture, and I don't even know how that even came to happen in such a short amount of time. But that was awesome. I'm going to have to make sure that you know that means a lot to me to have that picture. It's getting ready to be hung in my pool room, and it's sitting right in this spot where it's going to be hung right above. And I was rambling on to Evan, my 12-year-old, about what I thought that picture was taken from and the circumstances behind it. And I thought it was the fight picture where he and the other guy was Robin Ventura, I believe, had the fight, and I thought that was the bloody shirt picture. And Evan went and found it and researched it and looked at it, and he was like, "No, Dad, that's not it. That's not when that took place. It was a line drive. He was hitting the mouth with a baseball, and that's what split his lip, and that's why his shirt's all bloody." And I was like, "Oh, okay." And so that you know, because I've been on this rant about history makers and making and history in the making and believing people are history makers and trying to get them to understand that they are, or we all are history makers in our own right. But you are actually a librarian of history. You are an authenticator of history. You have made now another historical impact on my family, because I don't know if Evan would have gone back to do the research to know who Nolan Ryan was. And I appreciate that.
And I think that's important, because there's so much to learn from history. I'm not a history buff per se, but when I grew up, I guess similar to what Evan did, we read books about famous baseball players, and we didn't have the information, in some cases the over information, that the kids have at their fingertips now, because via their cell phone. We had to go look things up, and it's interesting that there would literally each year, when the new baseball cards would come out, you would read you'd look at the picture on the front, but you would read the picture on the back, and that's how you learned your baseball history. And I remember you just look, there'd be little stats on the back of a player's card, that this player had 10 RBIs in one game, or, this player, you didn't have the information at your fingertips, so you read it on the back of these cards, and you'd look at the trading cards, and that's where you got some of your information. But it's also important, though, that, like what Evan did, to be able to look up, it's going to help him have a connection to that photo now. Yeah. Which is kind of cool, and that's what you're looking for, I think. And that's why people collect stuff, because there's some form of connection to them, whether it be, hey, I had this card when I was 8 years old, and life seemed so easy. So you hearken back to that. You remember, your grandpa took you to your first baseball game, and this guy played, and he might not necessarily be, a Hall of Fame player, but it's somebody that your grandfather liked. And so maybe that's why you start to like that team or like that player. And there's, I think that's when people collect stuff. Some people just collect from a, they'll call it an investment, from a monetary, this will be worth money someday. But, we clearly all got it wrong multiple times over, because we all, our moms threw out our baseball cards. That's why they're valuable now, because if everybody had their baseball cards when they were a kid, they wouldn't be out buying cards. They wouldn't be, buying, cards that they had when they were a kid and trying to recapture some of that innocence and some of that joy that they had when, your biggest concern was, what's for dinner? What's mom going to make for dinner, and do I have to, can I still play outside until it gets dark? you know, that,
yeah.
That there's that time of innocence when you put them in your bicycle spokes and just, you know, you thought you were, you know, things were tough because you might have been bored, and when you were bored, your parents said, "Well, go outside and play." You know, you find a broom handle and a tennis ball, and you make up a game. You know, it's not. I think that's why probably what people collect. People collect artwork because there's a value to it, but it also elicits an emotion. Perhaps maybe they just like looking at something and they want it on their wall. Other people put it on their wall because they can tell everybody how much they paid for it. So there's all kinds of different reasons why I think people collect, but that there is still a history that I think people like to learn about when they own something. You know, when they buy it, they take ownership of it, and then they start to do research on it. So the fact that Evan's able to look at that and say, "Well, you know, no, Dad, this was from the line drive from Bo Jackson," you know, it's still something that engages him now. And you never know where that first spark is going to come from. That this may actually lead him to, you know, look on. You know, we didn't have YouTube videos. We literally, you know, we had nothing. None of this stuff was at our disposal, which is, I think, why a lot of the nicknames come from also, because people were writing stories or people were painting pictures, mental pictures, when we would listen to baseball games, you know, on the radio, and you looked at what people would do at Dodger Stadium. They'd be in the stadium and they'd still be listening to Vin Scully on their radios, because that's what they were raised with. They wanted Vin to paint the picture in their mind of what's going on, and that's where, you know, that you look at some of the fantastic nicknames from the early eras of the game. You know, Joe DiMaggio was the Yankee Clipper. Lou Gehrig was the Iron Horse. You know, Babe Ruth was the Sultan of SWAT. You know, you had these Georgia Peach, Ty Cobb. You had, you know, the Flying Dutchman. You had all these, you know, these great nicknames that if you hung one of these on a modern player, they'd be like, "What? What does that mean?" You know, you just don't have it. You know, Tom Seaver was the franchise because he was the franchise of the New York Mets. You know, it's just something that you don't get. You know, they just don't hang these monikers on people anymore, because there was the written word and there was the, you know, Stan the Man, Musial, Ted Williams was the Kid, the Splendid Splinter, like all these fantastic nicknames, you know, that these guys had. You just don't have them anymore.
And that's, you know, what's important, I think, is that the point that you've made is you've made history in his life, and he's caused him now to take history in another way. And to look at the good parts of history, because I know for myself, it's the last few years I've looked at history as being a bad thing, because I remember the bad parts first. And I mean, that's a part of where we are with the chemical balance and makeup of our brains. Our brains tend to remember the traumatic things first. And for whatever reason, tragedy is more traumatic and upsetting than a happy tragedy, right? I mean, you would think that wedding days and childbirth and laughter with friends and things that make you smile yesterday, today, or even 20 years ago would stay on the surface of your mind. But for whatever reason, the things that upset us, the things that pain us, it seems to be on the surface. And I don't know how much of that is just the enemy, you know, picking those up because those are the easy things that he can use to oppress us, or if it's just the way things are. But however it may be, they're there. And now these times with memorabilia, I find that people can always tie sights and sounds of the day that made them smile to these events. Evan will never forget that piece and where we were doing it, because that was now tied to the plaque I got for Father of the Year. And that same day, this picture came into our life as well. And he'll remember the pictures he has of himself wearing the tuxedo and being 12, and all the people came in town, because he's still talking about that event and how much fun he had. And I just think that's awesome.
And it is, and I think that clearly the defeated enemy, Satan, tries to steal our joy. And I think that's why he'll try to push you in that direction, because, you know, it's very easy to slip into that mode. But, I mean, there's always, there's always memories of what God brought us through as well, and the joy that God places before us. And so I think it's kind of a conscious choice, but I think that it's very easy for our subconscious to slip into that negative mode, because there's things that have to be done, and you know, we jokingly with one of our other friends, we talk about them as first world problems. We're like, you know, oh, you know, my I got to get my cable's not working, or my dish, you know, it's bad weather out, I can't watch my show. I'm like, bad weather out? I mean, for those of us that go back to literally when you had ABC, CBS, and NBC, like, you're like, oh darn, you can't get, you know, channel number 187 on tonight. So it's like, and that's really a problem. Here's a thought, you know, why don't you spend some time with, you know, your family instead of in front of the TV? I don't know. I think that history, you know, is kind of a net neutral, as far as, like, you know, you can look at bad history or good history, you know, and I think that the thing that happens with like we talked about with regards to some of the sports stuff, you know, it might have been your father's or your grandfather's favorite player, and that's when you look at that picture or hear that name, you automatically think of, you know, that person that you have that shared experience with now. So hopefully, prayerfully, whenever, you know, anyone perhaps in your household is having a little bit down, they can look at that, they can walk by that picture that's been hanging on the wall, the same spot that it's been hanging maybe for the previous 2, 3, 4 years, but say, I remember that night. That was a great night.
Exactly.
You know, and that's something that, you know, again, that might be, you know, when people go back and pine for the past of, you know, collecting the cards that they had when they were a kid, because they kind of remember the school bus, you know, the bus rides when, you know, they were flipping cards in the back seat of the bus, or, you know, just, I think that it's very easy to slip back into, you know, looking at the past, you know, when you're facing something.
Most definitely.
And the thing is, we're called to go forward. We're called to learn from the past, but not to dwell there. Because, you know, those of us, you know, that have accepted Christ as their Savior, we've been rescued from a past. So we're not meant to wallow in it. We're not meant to carry that baggage, carry that person that we were into the future, because we're a new creation in Christ. And so, you know, we're meant to move forward. And I think that I try to recognize what, I mean, I know fully what I've been rescued from. We're all sinners saved by grace. Anyone that's listening, anyone that thinks that they're too far gone or can't be saved because of what they've done, that's just a lie from the enemy. You know, because when Christ was on the cross, he said, it's finished. So we're not, you know, it wasn't meant for the people that were right there. It was meant for everybody that's going to come after that event, you know, and so it's finished. It's over. He's paid the price for us to be sons and daughters of Christ. And so it's something that, dwelling on the past and the defeated enemy, he can't steal our destiny, so he's trying to steal our joy. And so, because we're, you know, when you accept Christ, you know, it is finished. You know, he doesn't have dominion over our soul, but he's still the prowling lion seeking to steal, cheat, and destroy. And I think that's a conscious choice we have to make to say, you know, get behind me, Satan, because I'm not going to steal my joy right now.
Yeah, that's most definitely. I know that there's a scripture that comes to mind of when you were talking. I've been looking for it, and I'll find it and I'll post it as well. But it talks about the Lord will make room for your gifts, and the gifts will make room for you, I should say. And then another one talks about how the Lord will put you in the presence of great men. And you've been in the presence of some great people, and even if they haven't been in the presence of them with you that moment, you've been in the presence of their presence or the presence of their stuff. I mean, you are the curator, not only curator, but you are the authenticator for Elvis Presley's estate, Graceland, correct?
I work very closely with the people at Archives, and now almost 5 years ago, the person that owns Graceland contacted me and said, look, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's on the marketplace that's come out, you know, over the years that's not authentic with regards to Elvis Presley. And he goes, you know, we want to protect the brand that Elvis Presley is. I mean, he's been gone for, you know, almost 50 years now, and yet there's still people, you know, going in droves to the museum, to Graceland to visit, to recapture some of their past, to perhaps even, you know, embrace some of their future. And there are, you know, Elvis was an icon. He was a multimedia art icon before there really even was such a thing. I mean, he was music, he was television, he was movies. He was an American superstar. And obviously he was human. He had, you know, he had issues, but we all have issues. And what Joel was concerned about was the protection of that legacy. That when people are spending, you know, $20,000 and $30,000 and $40,000 for relics that they believe are real, but are the wrong size or the wrong manufacturer or not photo matched, you know, he said that we need to figure out a way to help clean this up. And so he knew my experience from the sports side, and you know, literally by it sounds like an astronomical number, but I've literally witnessed over 2 million autographs signed in my lifetime. And for those of you that are listening that might think that's an impossible number, during from 1989 to 1997, I worked for a company called The Scoreboard, and part of what they did was they supplied the signed memorabilia to Home Shopping Club, QVC, CVN, JCPenney catalogs, Hamaker Schlemmer catalogs, all these different companies. When the sports memorabilia industry was exploding, they had the contracts with the majority of the major athletes. And in that time window, Nolan Ryan was in, you know, in 1989, he got his 5,000th strikeout. Then he recorded his 6th no-hitter. Then he got his 300th win. Then he got his 7th no-hitter. Then it was his 1993 was his final season. And, you know, Muhammad Ali was still signing, you know, and Sandy Koufax. We had all these different athletes under contract, and I was the player relations director. So a couple of the agents and players told what effectively were my bosses that they didn't want anybody at their signings except for me. So I was very blessed to be the, for lack of better words, the exclusive person there signing with these athletes. And so I had the opportunity to, I was on the road for 200 plus days a year, wherever these guys were signing, I was there. So it's been an incredible journey, and Joel knew that history, and so he tasked me with setting up the whole authentication process, complete with proprietary holograms, proprietary custom security water, you know, letters for the authentication letters. So there's all kinds of different security elements on that paper. So what we've effectively done is in an ongoing fashion trying to clean up the market on the Elvis Presley memorabilia. And it's just something that there's a they've got an extensive photo archive, plus they've got an extensive archive of what was there when Elvis passed. So you're able to compare sizes and tagging and the stitching on the tagging and compare with some of the high-resolution photos where, and it's, for those of the, are not familiar, there's an extensive amount of due diligence that goes into it, where you'll look at how pockets line up, how buttons line up, how, you know, if there's creasing or if there's where where things, there's actually a lot of garments, a lot of clothes will have what we call a fingerprint. And it's not like a fingerprint, but there's something that's unique to it because of the way that, whether it be a pattern on a shirt or just something that stands out to say, this is the shirt that's in this picture, or this is not the shirt that's in this picture because of this, and this. So it's been an incredible journey in and of itself, just because I didn't come from a music industry background. I came from the sports side, but a lot of what you look at crosses over. A lot of what you do for authentication crosses over. When people look at that are rare documents experts, a lot of what they are doing will cross over to other genres than just a Declaration of Independence signer. They'll cross over to a contract, to a photo, if you study signatures, you have a grasp on signatures. That's what we've been. Not only have I been blessed enough to work with the athletes, I now have been working for 5 years with doing the deep dive into the Elvis Presley memorabilia or Elvis Presley authentication as well. So, and like I said, having worked with, having had an incredible, pool of real stuff to look at and to examine and to study, has helped that process, that learning curve, exponentially.
Well, that's awesome. That is really amazing. And that scripture, I did find it while you were talking.
While I was rambling.
It's Proverbs 18:16, and it says, a gift opens the way and ushers the giver into the presence of great. And that was the New International Version. Of course, the New Living for the more modern language, of course, would say, giving a gift can open doors. It gives access to important people. Several other translations would tell it differently, but that's the same general position. The Lord is definitely gifted, not just you, Harry, but a lot of us, to be in the presence of people that we would never have imagined. Had we not been obedient to the Lord, I would never have met Harry. We never would have been the friends and family that we are today had it not been our obedience to the Lord. So, and in being obedient, Harry, we're going to take our last break of the day, and then we'll be right back with you're listening to the Raising Men Show. We're getting here on WKBY 1080 AM, and you're also able to listen to us on iTunes, Spotify, and on the our archive app at theraisingmenshow.com. That's RZNGMEN. That's RZNGMEN. And again, we'll be right back taking our last break of the day, and then we'll be right back with Harry Bryant to close the show.
This is Craig Carlisle, the host of The Raising Men Show, and I'm also an executive producer of the independent feature film Restored Me.
I lost everything for something I didn't do. What type of God is going to watch a man get up on his feet and then kick him right back down and get dragged through the dirt again?
It's a powerful, feel-good dramedy that centers around a young man trying to restore his relationship with his young daughter and her mother.
Talk to him just like you're talking to him.
Where have you been, kid? These people take communion from me. I am their God.
This film speaks to restoring your faith and pushes a bold message of positivity and motivation. The cast includes Gary Owen, Bill Duke, William Lee, Matt Gerald, Richard T. Jones, Malik Yoboi, Yancey Arias, and Bo Casper Smart, just to name a few. Restored Me is available on over 100 digital markets, including iTunes, Amazon, and on demand from your local cable provider. Buy it, rent it. Either way, I'm asking you to watch it. It'll bless your life.
And we're back to the Raising Men Show. And again, it's our final segment, seven or eight minutes, Harry. We're going to really spend this time really talking about an authentic life, because this is what the title of the show is today. And I usually give the title of our show at the top. This is an authentic life and living an authentic life. And I wanted to make that the title. I believe that the Lord gave me that because of your occupation and what you're doing, of being authenticating other people's lives, so to speak, or authenticating things from their lives. Help the men, Harry, today understand the importance of living an authentic life. The where God has been with you, you believe, from the very moment that you were young to the point where you are now, and seeing God in all of the things that you're involved with.
I think that a lot of us get caught up, especially now in the modern era, with trying to post some stuff that's not real on Facebook. Everyone's trying to show their best life or something that's not, maybe not even their life, you know, just something that they're trying to be something they're not. And I think that's where probably why you and I became such close friends early on, because we were authentic with each other. And that's the way to establish sincere and deep, fast friendships, where when you're able to be authentic with people, when, you know, we're not perfect. We were never meant to be perfect. That's our goal, but we're never going to get there. We're always works in progress. And I think, you know, probably the depth of our relationship came from being on a prayer call, you know, the prayer calls that we were on, because we would share praise reports and prayer requests. And I think that a simple act of just literally praying for a brother or a sister, or, you know, praying together with family, because I think what happens is everybody's trying to look like it's all good on the outside, and we're hurting on the inside. And I think that's where authenticity is so important, because we all need prayer. We all have good days, we all have bad days, and we need the relationships around us, the authentic relationships around us, to pull us through that. You know, our relationship with Christ is clearly authentic. You know, but how often do we not fall back on it? How often do we say, I'm gonna get through this? How about just bending your knee and saying, God, I need help right now. We need to be authentic in our relationships, because that's really all that matters. If your relationship is not authentic, you have nothing. You know, so, you know, people always say keep it real or whatever, but that's, I found that on this journey, it's much more important to keep the people that, you know, in close to you in your life that you can call up and say, I'm having a really bad day, and they're not going to say, oh, well, I got to go. You know, there's, because time's a gift, and if someone's, you got to take the time to invest in these relationships, but they're so fulfilling afterwards. And I don't know if I answered the question or not, but for me, authenticity is everything. It's been in my line of work, where God's placed me, but it's become more and more important for whatever time I've got left, whether I'm in the third quarter or fourth quarter of life. At 56, I know I'm definitely in the second half. So, you know, I think that's what's important, and to encourage people to be real with others, with the people around them. You know, it doesn't mean to be hurtful or harmful or say nasty things, but it just literally let people in, because as men we're taught, you know, men don't cry, men don't, you know, this is how, you know, this is what men are supposed to do. And, you know, yeah, we're supposed to be breadwinners, yeah, we're supposed to be the head of the household, but we're also meant to, you know, we're meant to honor our wives, because we all have different needs, but we're not meant to be shut off to them. You know, we're meant to, yeah, you're supposed to be the breadwinner perhaps, but, you know, that doesn't mean that you're not meant to be the father of your children too. And take the time to spend time with your children, because they're a gift too, and you're going to blink and they're going to be out of the house.
Yeah.
And some of you might be a praise report when they're out of the house. But in general, like one of our colleagues that was at Graceland, he actually resigned. He was in charge of the PR, and he's like, you know, my kids are going to be out of the house in 5 years, and I need to spend more time with them.
Yeah.
You know, and sort of recognize the important things, the things that are going to be lasting versus that are not going to be lasting.
Now, Terry, I mean, interrupt you. We're winding this thing up really quick. Take 30 seconds. One word and a phrase, or one word and a thought that describes you, that you would want someone to always remember. Yep. That's the one word, and that's the thought you want people to remember you by. That's the authentic person that you are.
You know, I think sincere, maybe. Just because, I don't know, I just think that I try to be, you know, authentic with people. And if I say something, I'm not trying to say, you know, I'm trying to be, keep it real. And if I say something, I'm going to do something. Then that's, I think that I try to always, you know, under-promise and over-deliver. I don't like, it bothers me when people say, yeah, I'll do this, and then they don't. You know, it's, I think that, I don't know, that's one of the words, I guess, a word.
Well, I tell you, that's one of the words I would have used. Sincere, authentic. You need to know, and I want to make sure that you always hear publicly that how much I and my family love you and your wife and your just what you stand for and who you are. You've been places where people have never been before. You've been in the presence of people that others are clamoring for attention for, and in some cases, these great men are clamoring for your attention because they want you to provide a service for them. We hadn't even talked about your effect and impact in the Marvel Comics, how you authenticate for Stan Lee as well. But, or did, because it's in his death, in the late Stan Lee, of course. But you've been in places, and you've, of the time I've known you, you've never lost the God side of who you are. You've never gotten off track and become, thought more of yourself than you were. You, even the time when you called me, we were at the San Diego Comic Con. You called me, we were talking on the floor, and I said, hey, you know, or maybe I called you and said, hey, Namath's here, did you know? And even then, you knew you needed to conduct business because you had a contractual agreement with that organization and that gentleman and his team. But you didn't even say, hey, go back. You said, would you mind? I know you're out with your son, but could you go back there? I need to talk to such and such. There's always a humility with you that is, and a respect level with you that is great. And as men, guys, we have to make sure that we understand that and be authentic, like Harry said. We have to be sincere, like Harry said. We have to be real. And like the tagline with this show is even, we have real talk about real life. And so you're going to find that the Lord has been bringing guests on the show so far that are real guys, that are real life, and that show you and all of us what it is to be authentic. Because if we are not authentic, our children are going to tell on us. And if we're raising a generation of fraudulent men, I don't know how they're going to lead the next generation to come and the generations after that. But I want my men to be authentic. I want my men to be strong men of God. I want my men to know who God is and not just be some post about who God is. I want them to know who God is in their life and be able to stand flat-footed and know that God is great in their life. And God's brought us from so far to a place where I don't even know where he's going to have us end up. A friend of mine sent me a picture and this morning on a text message just before the show, before I got on the phone with you, Harry, and the picture was, man, can you imagine, or do you ever think about which one of your kids are going to be the one that's going to be wheeling you to, you know, the doctor's office and the old folks home and things like that? And I said, my response to her, now it may sound morbid, so guys, when you're listening, this it may sound morbid, but it's not. My concern as a parent is not going to be the one which one's going to be the one wheeling me there, because I'm not sure the Lord's going to have me be that far, because I'm trying to stay healthy enough to be able to walk myself to those places. But I wonder about which one of them is going to survive to get to that point. Because we're in a day and age where our kids are dying early, either by choices of their own or choices of someone else's. But in either case, it's the amount of time that the Lord has ordained for them to have. So however we may think it may be a choice or happenstance, those are all the days that we were given. They were given. So our choice then, and men, we've got to deal with the truth. We've got to be able to do everything that the Lord wanted us to do when he's wanted us to do this. So as you're listening here on the Raising Men Show, and I thank you all of the listeners for listening, and continue to please support our efforts, support our ministry. And here I've used the M word. I'm struggling with the M word. So I'm trying to make people understand that this is not just something that I do and we make money from it, because we don't make any money. And those maybe understand, I pay to be on air. The commercial advertisers that we have right now, I'm getting them to the point where they would be wanting to support the ministry financially. These are advertisers that the Lord told me, hey, show in and bless their ministries, bless their businesses by giving them free advertisement on the radio station, on my radio program, I should say. How long will we be able to do this? Harry, I don't know. But until the Lord says differently, that's what we have. That's why we play the same commercials every time, because that's the same group of people that the Lord told me to bless. And until the Lord says otherwise, we continue going this way. And I know I'm rambling, but we're at the end of the show. Carrie, I thank you for coming, and I bless you and your wife, Cindy, with peace, joy, and happiness, protection, and provision in Jesus' name, and be able to always bless you with traveling mercies and grace as you are getting ready to travel to the East Coast and do another signing. And I know by the time the show airs, you will already be in New York, and ideally we'll connect together there as family and friends the next time. And again, ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to The Raising Men Show right here on WKBY, 1080 AM out of Chatham, Virginia. And I know, Leroy, if you're listening, I know I do talk fast. I'm trying to bring it down. And you can also listen to us on theraisingmenshow.com. That's RZNGMEN.com. Theraisingmenshow.com. Another Super Tuesday is in the books. Had a great time, a great guest, and we'll see you all next week.
It's been a long time.
Preach up. You got it.
I'm back. This is Craig Carlisle, the host of the Raising Men Show, and I'm back Tuesdays 2 p.m. and 10 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. and 7 p.m. Pacific, right here on WKBY 1080 AM and WKBY1080.net. Tune in and we'll have real talk about real life.
Hey everyone, my name is Eric Tomlinson with the Tomlinson Group at Rancon Real Estate, where we design the sale of your home around you. With our nationwide network of agents, you and your family are at the center of every decision, conversation, and step of the journey to your next home. From hello to congratulations, selling your home with the Tomlinson Group at Rancon Real Estate is designed to both learn and surpass your expectations. Call me today at 951-970-6727 so we at the Tomlinson Group can begin surpassing your expectations today. We want to work for you.